Hello there, I'm George Wright. I'm a senior producer in the development bit of BBCI, which is what interactive TV and new TV technologies of the future is called this month. Some of you might remember that last year's NOFCON spoke a little bit about why interactive TV wasn't the web, why that was a good thing. This year I'm pleased to say that we've got a couple of examples of stuff that you can do with TV screens that are available all around now, in some cases not needing a net connection, just needing one or two PC parts. I'm joined here by Dominic Ludlam, the Ludlam family, who will be showing us Pandora's Box, and Stephen Jolly of Kings of War on the Search and Development part of the BBC, who's going to be showing us various bits of box with what happens when you poke around the broadcast stream. The stuff we do in interactive TV at the moment is divided up into two areas, I suppose. One is the consumer-facing stuff, pressing red on Sky, on Freeview, or in some cases on cable. Gives you information, multi-stream, probably aware of some of that sort of government. The second thing that we're looking at is kind of what happens next after that. There's a lot of talk in the BBC and outside about ways that new tech can change viewing habits, ways it's going to destroy the schedule, yada yada yada. Lots of areas think about that and make PowerPoint demos about that. What we've started doing about the last 6 to 12 months is actually try and make this for real. And one of the things that we were quite pleased and surprised was how relatively easy it is to do just by going to mappings. 44 quid DTT PCI card, Linux box, various distros, latest cards, fairly good support for all of the standard DTT cards, and you can start to play. Backstage, the internet version has been going for a wee while now. We are currently looking at how we can get involved. Get people like yourselves in bedrooms or in small companies or large web shops or indeed in interactive TV development shops involved. There's a large amount of work that's going on for interactive TV on Sky and on cable. There's very little that we see for stuff on DTT. DTT excites us a lot because it's the way that people are going to get TV in this country, predominantly free to air, once we get switch off. It's fun because there's various tools available. What does that mean? I mean, it's still relatively theoretical, but when it becomes practical is when you have a box on your desk or in your lounge at home, which can record a hell of a lot of television, way more than a PDR like Sky Plus or a PDR like TiVo, way more. That really starts to change how TV works, what it is, what happens when you miss something. So I hand over to the Ludlams now, who are going to demonstrate some of this in action.
Can you flip the source of that? Give a brief, very brief history. You had black and white back in the 40s.
And then you had an event that was a catalyst for a lot of people to uptake ITVs for the very first time. You then had ITV, which was the first time you had a competition in channels, and people had a choice about what they want to watch, and scheduling came into effect, that the idea that you could compete with someone else at a particular time to grab people's attention. Then the 65 lines, which was the precursor to colour, and it was the first major upgrade part of TV. Then colour happened, and then everyone got on board after that. And more latterly, you've had videos in the 80s, and interestingly with that, that VHS, the format that was out, was pushed as more of a time-shifting, the Philips at the time and Betamax were more pushing for a time shift kind of aspect to what videos would do for the home than VHS. VHS went down the route of having getting movies on VHS that you can go and walk to the video shop and rent. And that was a big win that really didn't know far more people used it as a vehicle for watching movies in the evening than did well to record things. It was very hard to record, then very hard to record.
44.
Yes, that's true. Video Plus came along as an effort to try and sort of help people work out what the hell to do with their video recorders, and it was reasonably successful. And then latterly, the important things are that TiVo and Google TV came along where they had relatively small hard drives, and for the first time you could time shift programs and record things direct to disk rather than to a tape. And so where are we now? Preview is very widespread in the UK. It's got a lot of coverage. We have Linux drivers for all of the major DVD cards you can get. And a single hard drive of that size is 400 gigabytes in size. That's quite crucial because a lot of this hinged upon that driving, at least that density being achieved. But throughout all of this, what has not happened? What has not changed about TV? Well, it's the scheduling. It's the idea that it's a stream that you use, you dip into, and you come out of. You may be able to record the old program here or there, but you have to deliberately set up a TiVo or whatever box you want in to go up and record it. You may record it regularly, but you have to tell it to do it. It's something that you it doesn't guess for you, or it can, but that's not there. It's not as wide as it can be. So you can now shift the entire stream. That the idea is that you actually don't care about recording individual programs. You record it all. You record the entire thing, the transport stream, as it comes down, and you put it on disk, and then keep it around, and for as much storage as you've got, you then get rid of it. And that really is a radical change in terms of how you interact with your TV, that it's much more of a change than disk recording of a particular program to disk that you know it's going to be there. This will have things you don't know there. This really does say, take the entire concept of Tuesday's work of output and keep it on disk, and you can go visit it whenever you want. So I think we should do a little bit of demo now. Right,
should we
flip it? Can
you
switch it
back to
Doctor Who? Do you want to do this one?
Sure.
Here it is, Doctor
Who.
I can switch back to.
But then we have the system. Here it is, the live demo. This system is recording everything. It hasn't met for the past 7 days, it has 5 channels, throughout which you can go back any time, sit down and choose any time in that past time. Pick a program and watch it. Here they are. This is last Friday, Doctor Who we've been watching. So already, we've watched a program that was broadcast last Friday. We should go back. And go back. Anytime. All the way back to last Saturday. All these programs we have available for us. That's BBC 3, BBC 2, BBC 1, BBC News 24, CBBC, CBBC, and BBC 4. Any programme in the past 7 days, you can pick. So let's say you used to sit down to watch the 10 o'clock news on BBC 1. Well, you used to be a capacity to make sure you get there and sit down in front of the TV, put that 10 o'clock and watch it. And now you don't. You sit down and you've got 3 moments, you can go through, flick through the programmes, and watch BBC News at 10 o'clock. There it is. From here, it's actually shifting the entire multiplex, it's just shifting the entire channel. So from here, we can switch to BBC 2. And we're still Thursday, 10 o'clock. If you missed a bit, if you're chopping in the chrome off, it doesn't matter. You can wind it back before you start recording. You keep going back in 5 seconds until you got to last week. So you hear that channel. Here is the ultimate in time shifting. Don't have to set anything up. You don't have to go down the pub and have someone say, oh, you know, are you going to watch something over tonight? Well, it doesn't matter. You can watch it when you get back home. And this actually changes the way you might want to watch programmes in the future as well. So now you've got a free moment, you sit down in front of your TV and you say, what's available? So now you've got a collection of 1,500 programmes that you can sort of choose from that were broadcast over the past week. And you want to find something that's perhaps, instead of looking for a particular time and saying what we broadcast here on this channel and on this time, I want to watch a movie. So we can search these programmes through categories as well. So if I want to watch any entertainment programme, we can go back and say, ah, Titanic, I don't know when it's broadcast, follow on, here it is. So it's basically a revolution in TV. You no longer have to sit down and care what time it is. You sit down and you choose, serve me some interesting content.
View your programs. And then another interesting one is
that you start not to care enough for certain things. When it was on. So what is daytime TV? If you've got the ability to shift it all, it doesn't matter actually when it arrived in your box, as long as it's there, it's a feed. It drips programs into this pot. You then don't care whether it's BBC One or Two. It doesn't matter. It may be repeated. It really is not important to you how it got there. And then the logical sort of extrapolation of that is that you actually don't care who broadcasts it, be it ITV or BBC or Channel 4. It doesn't matter. It's actually the content that you're interested in, not the manner in which it got there, not the whether it's got adverts or whatever. You know, that it arrives in your box and you watch it and then it gets deleted and you move on to the next episode. So it really has a very far-reaching ramifications about the nature of the TV stream that we have and scheduling. And this is part of what George was talking about. So we put up a little bit of a website about this box, and it's at that URL, cross.tv, if you want to have a quick look. It's just a placeholder right now, but we should be putting up some information about what this box represents shortly. Thank you.
Backstage.bbc-style stuff with the content that we broadcast rather than just the stuff which we distribute by the internet. So, I'm going to start with talking about Dirac, which is the thing I'm most likely to have heard of, to be honest. It's a new video codec, which we're developing in BTRD in collaboration with people in the open source community. It's free. You can download it from SourceForge, and I need a choice of user-friendly license. It's patent and royalty-free, and the asterisk next to the word patent there means that, yes, there are some aspects of it that we at BBC have patented, but they're licensed to anyone who wants to use them on a royalty-free basis. And it's comparable in quality to the best of its competitors, so Microsoft's Windows Media Live, for example, or PMA for ABC codec. And it is, as I mentioned, free. So why on earth would the BBC want to develop an open source video codec? And the first and foremost reason is that we want to spend our money on programs, not on encoding videos as other people. And pretty much all the existing codecs require royalties. We want to distribute our programs as efficiently as possible, which means we want to use the best coding technology available. So we want to best develop that codec ourselves on our own terms, but obtaining help from other interested parties. And finally, we want it to be open source because we want the license who was funding all this work, to be able to use the software that they paid for. Here are some potential uses for Dirac. Within the BBC, we would like the Creative Archive, which you've probably heard of, to be based around Dirac. Creative Archive is the idea that a lot of the BBC's older content, especially actual stuff, would be made available for anyone in the UK to reuse and repurpose, make it into programs, etc. For news, for distributing video from news gallery teams back to the studio, Dirac would be an attractive royalty-free option. And also, if you want live distribution video, I'm sure everyone here is still having to download real player to watch news clips on the BBC website. It would be fantastic if we could do that in a slightly less real player-oriented fashion. And also for signing for deaf people on television. If you've watched News 24 recently, you'll notice that for about an hour every afternoon, all of a sudden the picture shrinks if you lose its size and a strange man appears waving his arms around. Now, we have a commitment within the BBC to provide signing for our deaf viewers. But at the same time, we don't want to annoy non-deaf people by forcing them to put up with signing. So we would like to use what's called closed signing, where you can turn on or off the little man as you wish. But broadcasting pictures of a little end require bandwidth. So we'd like to use DirectCloud and broadcast the cosine either within the broadcast stream or over the internet in a bandwidth efficient manner. And that is currently an ongoing project that I need to see whether we can do that. So there has been interest in Dirac from industry. I can't mention specific names, but a number of very large technology and broadcast companies have expressed interest in incorporating Dirac into some of their products. And at home, it's possible that Dirac will appear in the set-top box at some point. It's possible that the screensaver on my laptop will come on. And obviously, in your home DVRs, you may wish to use Dirac to reduce the amount of display that the programs you record take up. And obviously, Dirac's open source, you can use it as a video codec in any software you get right. So, I'm not going to say very much about the technology. That's because it's very complicated and I don't actually understand it for myself. The key difference between Dirac and existing codecs is that it uses wavelets. Now, I'm not going to say anything about how wavelets work, I'm going to say they make pictures look like that. So, rather than blocky pictures, which you get switch on your preview box and go to your TV and stare really closely, you can see that the picture shows lots of blocking and no artifacts. Dirac doesn't give you blocks, it gives you kind of blurred, smooth bits instead, which for moving pictures look a lot nicer. Version compensation, that's a technique where the codec looks at the difference between two frames and tries to work out whether the bits of the picture have moved or not. And then takes that into account to reduce the HLR some information that needs to be generated. And then arithmetic coding is a packing method which takes the encoded stream and packs it as efficiently as possible, minimizing redundancy. And those three tools, tools is the technical term for those things, those three tools are basically the sum of Dirac, and its simplicity is one of the things which makes it so attractive. So some of the software which already supports Dirac, VLC, mPlayer, with a patch which you can download on the website, Windows Media Player, if you download Dirac directory filter, FFmpeg and Transcode, both the patches. And we've done the best we can to make adding support for other players as simple as possible. There's a simple C-based API, and this code is documentation available on the website. So if your favorite media player is not yet supported, then please feel free to consider any magic support for it. The future of Dirac. By September, we will hope to have real-time playback of TV quality video on a PC. By the end of 2005, Dirac will be a beta, and what that means is the bitstream format will be fixed, so if you encode Dirac with one version of the codec, then you'll be able to decode it with any future version. And then in 2006, we hope to have a release quality version, which it's hard to define when the product hits 1.0, of course, the development will probably continue, but that's the point where we can say, yes, this is now perfectly usable in any environment we can think of. And we will probably standardize Dirac through W3C, so it will be an open, publicly available free standard for Dirac and how it works. And yes, we do want help. We've had a fantastic response from people wanting to contribute to the project up from outside the BBC already, but if you can write software or documentation, it will generally be very enthusiastic. Then we'd love to have you helping us. And if you want more info, then that's the Dirac homepage there. You can find out more than you wanted to know. So I'm going to talk very briefly about Camellia. Michael Sparks, who was sitting in the audience, gave a lovely talk about it in one of the earlier sessions today. Camellia is a Python-based framework for creating highly modular and current applications. So think about Unix pipes and piping together commands in the Unix shell, but in a much more flexible fashion. It was designed as a test bed for large scale need for delivery protocols, but it is genuinely useful in the sense that we could use it for pretty much any application we can think of. Again, it's an open source piece of software, and again, it's built in open source groups. And again, there's a growing community of people who are interested in the project, and we would love for you to be involved with that if you feel so inclined. Now, the open technologies we develop in the BBC are not limited to stuff which will be of interest to consumers. The chances are that unless you work in the broadcast industry, the media dispatch protocol will never be installed on your computer. But this is a protocol which we're developing within the broadcast industry to get around the problem of having to send large video files between broadcasters using motorbikes. But we feel that networks would be a more efficient technology. So again, this is a network protocol being developed collaboratively. For what it's worth, it uses an XML manifest to describe the transfer of files, give the details of what will be transferred by the protocol between what two machines, with what security, etc., etc. And there will be an open source reference implementation available by September, and if you want more information about that, then there's a website link for you there. And all those projects, and many more, you can find listed on our Berkeley Advanced Banking new open source website at that link. And hopefully that website will continue to grow as those of us who write software within the UC can say, persuade our bosses that are going to open source is the future. Okay, now the second part of my talk is about digital TV hacks. I'm sure a lot of you were here for the BBC Backstage launch earlier, and where you learn that the BBC is working with you to take its online content and do fantastically cool things with it. Well, we make content available in other ways than on the web, of course, we can broadcast television and all those things. So I'm going to start by talking briefly about what makes up EB norms for that. EBB is digital TV broadcasting, and it's the family of standards by which digital television is broadcast in the UK on terrestrial cable and satellite. And the fundamental unit of digital video broadcasting is the multiplex, which contains several digital TV channels. And certainly, as far as terrestrial is concerned, one digital multiplex tends to take up the same amount of bandwidth as one old analog television channel. So within each DVB multiplex, you have a number of TV channels and some extra stuff, like the EPG. And associated with each television channel, you have a number of services. Obviously, you have video and audio. But in addition, you have a audio description, which is a service for partially sighted people, whereby when there's not much dialogue happening, a commentator reads out a description of what's happening on screen. Subtitles generally broadcast, certainly the BBC programmes, and often increasingly there's some form of interactive application that accompanies the programme. So if you want to hack away at the stuff we broadcast, you're going to need to get into one of these transport streams. Now there's three ways of doing this. The cheapest, easiest, and simplest way is to go to Mountain, buy yourself a PCR USB EU card, and plug it into your spare Windows PC. There's a compatibility list for Linux at that URL. The second way, which is the one I tend to use personally, just because of the equipment we have in my home, is to take a suitable PDR. Now, the only one I actually know of is the Brookfield TF5800, but that's a PDR with the USB subs on the back, which you can copy the raw transport stream files off straight onto your PC. You can then play them back directly in VLC and certain other media players where you can transcode them or burn them to DVD or whatever. Or you can do call hacks on them. And your third option is some set-top boxes, which can then be hackable, such as the Dreambox, which is basically a sub-Linux box with a digital terrestrial receiver. Once you've got your transport stream, you're going to need to process it somehow. In my experience, the most flexible tool available at the moment is something called Project X, which is a Java application that can take a transport stream input and split out all the various components and save them a number of useful formats. You also have the option of using the DVB tools, which I've not personally investigated much, but which intends to be command line tools for processing transport streams. And there's also a tool called PDA Streamento, which is not so useful, but it turns an MPEG transport stream into an MPEG program stream, which makes it easier to play back on in terms of media players, but it's not so useful for that. So here's an example hack. I actually have this running, not live, but in studio real time upstairs in the corner where we're doing demos. You start off with your transport stream, which comes from a television transmitter, obviously, and you capture that somehow and process it to extract the subtitles. Now, unfortunately, from my perspective, subtitles on visual television are broadcast as bitmaps, where obviously the processing would be a lot handier if it happens text format. So with a little thought, I eventually found GOCR, which is about as good as it gets as far as open source OCR software goes. And you run your subtitles through that, and you get a reasonable approximation to the text from which they're generated. Now, in this case, I then took those subtitles and fed them straight into PySpy, which you may have come across. It's been featured on Slashdot once or twice, most notably in the context of Potter Social Networks and Shakespeare. But what it does is it plots social networks. A social network is a graph which shows the relationships between entities. Now, in the case of the graph you can see there, I have a large version on the next slide. This is an inferred social network diagram for the French Grand Prix, which is a month or two ago now. And what the entities in the graph are the teams that drive this interface, and links drawn between them showing the strength of the relationship, where the relationship refers to anything which could have had an effect on the outcome of the race. Now that's the interpretation. Generating the simple, I fed the subtitles from commentary into the application, and then told it to look for the coincidence of two or more entities within the same sentence. So that's a very, very simple case. You get an interesting result, which those who follow Formula One closely assure me there's some resemblance to the actual nature of the race. Those are the two tools beyond what I've already talked about, that I'm using the hack PySpy, and also a quick hack streaming library and visualization code, which will eventually be that URL that is not quite yet in the releasable state at the moment. My colleague Gareth Smith and I were up until 2 o'clock this morning getting something demoed. So, of the various components of the broadcast stream that I talked about earlier, let's start by thinking about UBG data. And these are just some sample ideas which we came up with in a half-hour brainstorming session. So much like Ben was talking about earlier, this is far from exhausted, and the cool ideas you have to come up. So, for example, you can track TV trends, possibly done in behind the TV, if that's your bag, by looking at the incidence of words in UBG data, or you can watch TV by the TV personality top 10, or you can implement proc-mouth TV, and send in a program featuring your most hated TV personality straight to dead null. Then there's the possibility of taking TV content and watching it in new ways. If you took the soundtrack and the audio description track, which I was talking about earlier, and mix them together, you might have missed the podcast and the TV program that you listen to in your own program. Or you could create a subtitle trigger slideshow. Every time the subtitles change, you take a screenshot, then you stream those together and end up with a very low bandwidth version of a TV program that you could watch on devices which can't stream video, can't play audio, but can show pictures. Obviously, you've got the option of transcoding your TV stream to DLX XV or, of course, DUAC, and watching it on devices which can play video, which don't have much capacity. Or you can create your edited highlights of the TV program by searching through the subtitles for keywords, and then taking maybe 10 seconds of audio and video from either side. or you can automatically create yourself your own scrapbook TV program containing every single bit of TV in the last week about owning. Okay. So some more cool stuff to do. This top one's a bit of a leading suggestion. You may have noticed that in all of the open source PBR packages available, Fonz TV, Myth TV, whatever, there is no capability for watching interactive television. This is because there is no open source interpreter available for interactive television. The only interpreters available have to be licensed from the manufacturers with extraordinary amounts of money. So if anybody wants to do something in the benefit of their television watching humanity, an open source interpreter for interactive TV would be very helpful to do. Then you can extract recipes from the subtitles of a cookbook program and feed them to your robotic kitchen, which I assume you all know. This is 2005 after all. Or you can run beat detection algorithms against soundtracks. Look for parts of the soundtracks which the beat detection algorithms actually give you a beat count, and then use that to detect the music, extract it, and then do whatever you like with it, be realistic with it. You could run a cut detector on TV programs and determine how pacey they are in the cafe. And then in your PBR, in your PBR, watch TV based on your mood. Or you can run stress analysis of one of the soundtracks and create a politician's life effect. Not that politicians ever are, who knows? So that's about the blog of you. If you want further information, the BBC Open Source website is the source for all your open source BBC needs. BBC Research and Development is a part of the BBC I work for. You can find information about the projects I've talked about and all the other stuff that we do. I've talked about quite extensive stuff that we do. That's our website, bbc.co.uk/rd. We have a general purpose email address for any general information you have. And of course, you're welcome to contact me about anything I've talked about, and that's my email address at the bottom of the screen. That's all.
Almost all free-flow digital boxes are not connected to any sort of network. They're just packed.
receive information. It's working the same way. The second is that we kind of want to keep it just broadcasted, because that allows it, for example, to be used in portable devices that might never have a net connection, but might be, you know, at some point in the future, improving transmissions or much better than we found, that they might be able to pick up TV, but wouldn't then be able to get on the net.
Two quick questions back there. DRM, has that been considered a positive one? And secondly, streaming, you mentioned that it could be used for streaming. Are you going to release some sort of information for streaming service?
Okay. I assume we're talking about digital rights management.
Yeah.
DRM is just video game, but there's no reason why you couldn't back to the DRM if you wanted to, as far as I'm doing.
Services that we provide are dealt with either by Sky or the cable codes or the premium, and that's quite what we've been doing, as I said, in the last 6 to 12 months is doing stuff just because we can. So if we tried to pose it this as a device that we could sell 12 months ago, it would have seemed quite bizarre, quite far off. And it's such a shift compared to TiVo or video recording. And so I think we're still exploring, to be honest, before we begin to think about any of those sort of questions. Would you agree with that?
We're
asking anyone else who's interested what to do next. And I think that we're going to keep doing that before we start thinking about any of those questions.
Okay,
I'm going to have
any
questions.
I'm going to have to point out that all the presentations made today will be